As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, hey, game one. It's the playoffs, baby. You got to get ready for it, man. Let's not freak out. Yeah.
Don't freak out.
Don't freak out here. No anxiety. This is going to be a sunshine pod.
Keep your composure, people. Keep your composure. We got this. Let's go.
To the Glue Guys, this is Mike Harris. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BK Glue Guys. NetsDaily.com. The Athletic. Get yourself behind the paywall. I think it's $1 a month for 6 months. Get yourself behind the paywall at TheAthletic.com/Glue Guys. A subsidiary of the New York Times. Brian.
Michael.
The playoffs are back.
We watched some playoff basketball. All right, let's get right into it. No BSing around, Mike. How was your weekend?
Tell me about Easter. So I think Brian and I had our pre-show meeting, and we're both in the same sort of mental state.
4 hour long pre-production.
I am not downtrodden. I am not downcast. If anything, I am buoyed. I am floating above the ether for how this team.
That might be too much for me.
That's too much.
That's, you know. but it's one thing. You know, it's good. Good that you're there. Okay. I like that for you.
I do want to shout out, hey, Slack crew, everyone who listened to this podcast who's on Slack. I was away. I was on vacation last week, and it's 10:08 as we're recording, and I'm already getting the, hey, bud, how's your break? For Slack's,
Slack crew?
You know, Slack.
People who use Slack professionally. Yeah. Yeah.
So don't
message Mike. Stop messaging Mike if you're on
there's
Slack.
There's a grace period. A Monday morning post-vacation grace period, 10 o'clock, it's not that it's too early, but it's unbecoming. And actually, the person who did that, I actually really like, so I apologize if he's
Well, you're being appropriate, and you're losing your Q rating. Mike, we watched some basketball. You're buoyed. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Sam buoyed,
I'll say that. Like, my big takeaway, and I think this is the only take, was that that's not true. There's you have a lot of different takes. I don't want to like shut people out from the conversation, right? But I think that if you look at just how bad Kevin Durant played and how their strategy effectively was just like incredible ball denial of Kevin Durant to the point where it's probably illegal amounts of contact for the ball denial, and then have him just like have a trillion turnovers and never look to pass the ball and just miss every shot he takes, and then to still almost win like by a tenth of a second or whatever it was, you have to look at that outcome and be a little bit optimistic about like, well, you can't, I mean, truly the best player maybe in basketball and certainly on our team had, I think, the worst game of his career as a Net potentially. Like it could have been that bad. And
the play-in, is Kevin Durant clutch? Can he handle the pressure? Is he a cupcake, Brian? Recent history details him as being one of the biggest choke artists in the NBA.
Hey,
no, we're not doing this.
But yeah, anyway, so my quick, like, you know, quick off the cuff take was I was pretty stoked about the game for the most part, despite the fact that we lost, only for the reason that we could not have played worse, I don't think, and then still almost won.
Yeah, there's a lot of positives, and I'm going to weave in throughout this episode optimism, pessimism, and self-improvement. Things to be optimistic about seem to be a little bit pessimistic, and then, hey, could we improve it? Because it doesn't work just to be pessimistic. Can we improve ourselves in that case? Yeah, Kevin Durant, I mean, he was 9 for 24 from the field, 1 for 5 from 3. There was one really ugly, like, it was ugly at times. 6 turnovers. Ugh. And Brian and I talked about this before the pod in our pre-show meeting. On the play that Jason Tatum streaks to the basket to score the game-winning bucket, Durant was guarding Tatum. Now, it was a chaotic defensive set, right? The Nets are sort of all hands on deck, doing everything they can to stop any shot. That's what happens at the end of games. But Durant's at the top of the key looking at the ball. Tatum's at the top of the key, and Tatum just streaks to the basket. And Kyrie's the only one that seems to notice, and Kyrie tries to play like a half second of defense as Tatum's. I mean, it's impossible. So, I mean, it's on Kevin Durant. It's on him.
I should know this. Maybe you know this, Mike. Did they have a timeout at the end of that game that they didn't use? Is that? I don't know if it's worth it to find out, but let me see. Because, like, that would be a great call. And honestly, it's part of, like, that's one data point in the Celtics' favor, because Brad Stevens, if that was the call, and that's like their.
It's not Brad Stevens, it's Ime Udoka.
Sorry, Ime Udoka. If that was the call, it was a good call. Because, like, the Nets are not a super stable defensive operation, and to just push it with 14 seconds left to go is a smart thing to do against a team like us. So I tip of the hat to that call if they did have a timeout.
Yeah, it's going to take me way too long to sort of confirm. Yeah. Well, I know you were delaying and trying to draw it out.
I was reading your eyes and seeing if there was a timeout, like, but nothing. Nothing. That's okay. We'll figure it out afterwards.
I completely agree with you, your overall take on this. Is that, like, the Nets, there's a lot of things that we can tick down of saying, you know, they were too foul happy. Goran talked about that after the game. Kevin Durant was mauled consistently off the ball. And I don't know what it has become that Kevin Durant's allowed to just be pushed around consistently off ball and no foul is ever called. PJ Tucker did this last postseason where he denied Kevin Durant the ability to move. Like, off the ball defense it's not in the NFL where you have a 5-yard grace period off the line of scrimmage where a defensive back can do pretty much whatever he wants to a wide receiver. It doesn't exist in basketball. For some reason, Kevin Durant is left to just be abused. Like, I don't really want to go down what you could be abused like, but it is
dark.
It is some dark stuff. It's some dark stuff.
Jeez.
And so I don't really know what's happening with that, but the Nets were way too foul happy. The rebounding was a massive issue at various points in the game where Tice and Horford were making Drummond not look to be all that effective. And we'll talk about Andre Drummond in a sec. Bruce Brown didn't have, like, any sort of remarkable game in terms of scoring. Drummond had no scoring. Curry basically scored all of his points at the beginning of the game. But then there are things to be excited by, Nick Claxton and Goran. So I think, like, overall, this is like, let's take a breath, right? This is game one of hopefully the Nets winning a championship. Now, we don't know that, right? And losing this game, a game that you should have won technically at the end. If you have the ball up and you're up 1 point and you have Kevin Durant has the ball in his hands to possibly put you up by 3 or 4, you know, you should feel pretty good about that situation. I think probably the odds in that situation are like Nets 60% win possibility, maybe even higher than that, right? But what we saw was something that's been a symptom all year, which is at the end of games, because the Nets aren't very good on defense, the other team can score pretty much when they want to. And when the Nets need to score a really big bucket, they're good. They're not great because they often, the way they play offense is, you know, one-on-one stuff. And that's what happened. Kevin Durant was just, he was just left to kind of do Kevin Durant stuff. And there was nothing else happening there. And that's that's how this team is built right now, is that nothing else happens.
Like as I watch the game, like, part of what I'm also confident about, too, is that, like, there's not a whole lot of players on the Celtics that like that annoy me or like like frustrate me in the sense that they're gonna be like have a game, like sort of like these Lou Williams types players, you know, kind of like fringy scory guys.
Yes.
Even Jaylen Brown, honestly, I way prefer it when he shoots. I mean, Tatum's the only guy that I don't want to shoot on the team, basically. That's sort of
Tatum's
like
Tatum's amazing.
So, Tatum's amazing and he hits really hard shots now, and so like he is certainly a spectacle. And there's like anytime that
spectacles,
we can have a possession.
Wallet and one.
Anytime that we can have a possession and in a Jaylen Brown shot over Jason Tatum, I'm pretty stoked on it. That feels very like that feels earned and hard won.
So this is like pessimism, optimism, you know, self-improvement. This is in the self-improvement category. So Tatum had a really efficient, strong game. He took 12 free throws, 10 for 12 from the free throw line, 9-18 from the field, 31 points, 8 assists. It felt like an even better game because he hit so many big shots and particularly the game-winning shot at the end. We talked about this in our preview show. The Nets need to treat Jason Tatum like every team treats Kevin Durant. Like, they need to be throwing doubles at him. They need to make it extremely difficult for him. I mean, Marcus Smart took 17 shots in the game. That is actually what you want. The thing is, he hit half of them, and he was 4 for 9 from three. So, and he did a bunch of other stuff that he always does. So, like, the Nets did get the ball out of Tatum's hands, but they need to make it, like, that's their main objective. Because, like you talked about, Jaylen Brown could have a really good game, and there's no disrespect. He's an all-star, right? But I don't... there's not, like, a fear factor that he's going to do what Kyrie, Tatum, or Kevin Durant can do, right?
Yeah. And also, like, just I wish that we could replicate a little bit of what they're doing on Kevin Durant defensively to Tatum. Like, why can't we get, like,
yeah.
Bruce Brown to just deny him the ball and front him as often as possible? Like, instead, we have to, like, ice him after he's already received the ball, which he's such a good ball handler. It's like, okay, like, he's going to figure that out. And we just let him get the ball at the top of the key, like, every possession he wants, which... Why? Why do we let this happen? We should be face guarding him the entire way down the floor.
Well, and part of the issue is the Nets, from a defensive perspective, it's a bad matchup because everything that the Celtics have is all wings, all biggie wings.
We're just missing one James Johnson, and that would be
seriously.
The
James Johnson.
I was joking.
James Johnson could have done something in this game.
Wow, there it is.
On some level. No, I mean, Kessler Edwards getting minutes in the playoff game, I'm surprised by. I'm still trying to rewind to see if they had a timeout, and they did have a timeout. The Celtics did.
They did.
So you were validated in your take.
I feel validated. I feel vindicated.
So we don't have to remove that from the show. And the Nets actually had two timeouts, but of course they couldn't have taken them.
You're stuffed up, Doug.
Yeah,
damn,
I'm stuffed
up. These allergies are crazy.
I just took a COVID test too, which just like... My nose are just like,
going,
what's happening?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to dive. Let's do this. Quick break. And then I'm going to dive into a little bit more optimism, pessimism, much more about this game, and much more about how the series may play out going forward.
Fired up.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back, Brian. I'm just going to kind of go down my list, and that'll kind of guide the conversation. Optimism. Kyrie Irving is a god.
I feel optimistic about that.
I was concerned about Kyrie heading into the series because Marcus Smart should be the type of defender that gives Kyrie a lot of trouble. You know, like, he's got strength, length, and he's very active, and he's just a grumpy guy on the court. And you know, Kyrie's amazing.
You know why I'm not worried about this is because, you know, despite all of Kyrie's citizen of the world Buddhist bullshit, he is ultimately an incredibly spite-driven person. I think that's
where Russell Brand. Meet him. We meet him that's our Venn diagram. There's a lot of things that he does that we don't agree with, but hey, woo, let's spite.
He's very much like Russell Brand from Forgetting Sarah Marshall. That's sort of my... That's sort of
Please explain.
Because he has like all this like, you know, namaste stuff. But really when it comes down to it, he wants to like stick his middle finger in your face and like, you know, steal your girlfriend or whatever. Like that's his ultimate like, he's still, you know, it's a thin veneer of these like.
Des Lombardo, just be careful about putting Kyrie's face on Russell Brand having SEX. With Kristen Bell in the let's be delicate about that.
But
be classy. Keep it classy, Des Lombardo, our social media extraordinaire.
Anyways, you know what I'm getting at. Anyways, so obviously he's getting fined like a bajillion dollars for getting into a spat with the front row. And I really do ultimately think that type of stuff is why you get really great performance. It's why he's been so great all season, to be honest with you. I think that really his whole anti-vax persona now is one that's ultimately born of spite, you know, and spite towards the world, broadly speaking, the league, anyone who's preventing, you know, he feels very much me against the world.
Yeah, he was so persecuted for his stance. So, I mean, he couldn't have helped being persecuted in that way. He couldn't have. How could he have prevented this persecution?
It's resulted in the immaculate basketball we're watching right now. So, you know, ends justify the means, 100%.
Wait, let's link that. So you're saying anti-vax equals good basketball.
In his mind. And so it's a placebo effect. And, well, you know.
Kevin Durant did get vaccinated. So maybe you have something there. It diminishes your skills.
Don't you think? I think it probably has a placebo effect for him. Anyways,
yep.
Or even more to the point, it's spite driven. Like, look, I didn't get it and I got my way and now everyone didn't want me to play and now I'm going to play and I'm going to play so well that it's going to make you rethink your whole vax.
Yeah. And, you know, and let's say this before sort of this game. I mean, there's been other examples in the past. There was this idea that Kyrie would never want to play. He didn't want to play in Cleveland when he was in Boston. And when he was with the Nets, there was this idea that, remember when he had the shoulder impingement and, oh, that's a fake injury. He doesn't want to play in Boston, right? And then we had the sage burning where he was in Boston, you know, burning sage, and everyone who are these clam chowder, baked beans, eating.
You can just see the chowder hanging off their lips. They have like just chowder in the corners of their
disgusting.
Boston people are. They need to. You need to wipe your mouths of all that chowder.
Dunkin' Donuts drinking. Ugh, disgust. Hey, I love Dunkin' Donuts. Thank you, Dunkin'
you
Donuts.
You do. I know. I can tell you love. Is it? Are they from Boston? Is that a thing?
Yeah. I think it's actually based in Providence, but it's a new, very big in Boston.
All right,
Dunkin'. So. Sam Adams, another brand. Just thinking of Boston brands.
Sam Adams.
Gross. Yeah, gross. New Balance. Your sneakers are terrible. Harvard.
How do you know all these Boston brand? New Balance is from Boston, too? Yeah, what the hell?
I'm pretty sure.
All right.
Sorry.
How do you know these things?
Yeah, well, hey, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. You've been reading the WSJ?
The narrative on Kyrie is that he didn't want to play in the arenas he used to call home, right? And that he was a fragile flower. When, if you actually look at the evidence... He's a killer. He's hit one of the biggest shots in NBA history.
Stone cold killer.
He really believes he's the best player on the floor every time he's on the floor. Yeah, there's definitely times when he seems like he's mentally sort of off. You know, there's those moments. But realistically, if you look over the span of his time, when he's healthy playing in the playoffs, he's a very effective player. And he was awesome in Boston. Now, Brian, let's get to this conversation. We'll get back to basketball in a sec. But
can I actually just like, do you have like an encyclopedic knowledge of corporate headquarters? Like if I just say like, where's Radio Shack? Like you'll just,
I don't know if Radio like, Shack, I think it's like owned by Virginia. A private investment firm now. So probably New York is technically the corporate headquarters, but Sabres in Tallahassee, Florida. Sabres, the company that buys, you know, Michael Scott's company. In the office. Right. I know it's a Tallahassee.
I interrupted you. Well, I'm going to get more.
No,
of
I'm ready. If you want to throw out some companies, I'm ready. A lot of them are in New Jersey, and And
what about Smashburger? Where's Smashburger?
I don't know if they have a corporate. Do you think corporate? They have a Smashburger corporate headquarters? You know, I did drive by a. Do you know Stewart's, the gas station?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, that's in like Saratoga. I know that because I drove.
That makes.
And I'm like, that's like Willy Wonka to me. To be inside the Stewart's. They have fantastic ice cream. It's very cheap. That's why I like it. Okay. Obviously, Ben & Jerry's is in Vermont. But it's not Burlington. Burlington. It's somewhere else. Okay. I forget where it is.
Jeez.
So what were we talking about? We're talking about Kyrie Irving.
I completely derailed you.
Oh, yeah. And
then you were going into something. Yeah.
Okay. So here's the deal. I love being a part of the Nets fan base, right? I think we're inviting, we're welcoming to all kinds. You know, we want more fans. And yeah, the atmosphere at Barclays isn't, you know, a mosh pit. It is filled with people who really love basketball, who generally seem to either want to be there for, you know, sort of the scene of it all or love the Nets, right? Like you're showing up to a Nets game because you love the Nets or you're famous and you want to sit courtside. I understand that. But what we don't do is the disgusting acts that some Celtics fans tend to perpetrate. This is not just Celtics fans. You'll see it with Sixers fans. You'll see it Utah Jazz, Indiana Pacers. There's a lot of fan bases in the NBA where there's just like sort of a mental mafia who will scream and curse at guys like Kyrie. And I find that aspect of fandom so disgusting because if you really break it down, so basketball should be fun, right? It's entertainment. And what Kyrie is doing is so electric, so delicious. Like, to try to denigrate the way – who he is as a person when the point of him in his existence for you is to hopefully enjoy how he plays basketball, it doesn't make logical sense. If an alien came down from space and they're like, show me human culture, and we took him to a basketball game and we saw all these Boston people yelling, one, they would be terrified and would say, let's not mess with Earth because there's a lot of angry people in this place they call Boston. But two, they would say, why do these people scream expletives at the most dynamic person on this performance stage? Well, because he's wearing the wrong shirt. It's like, okay. And for anyone who's like, there's a lot of this browbeating on Twitter of Kyrie, how could he flick off the fans? How could he curse at fans? I don't understand that mindset. It's like, the guy's human. What is he supposed to do? Like, he's just supposed to be super silent and take it while also being, they also wanted to be intense on the basketball court and, you know, be a killer on the court. But just because he's doing an inbounds pass and there's fans screaming stuff at him that he's supposed to have two different brains, essentially, right? He's supposed to be severed, like the show Severance, but I won't ruin. But
don't do it.
You're two different people. I mean, that's not ruining it. You're a person when you're at work and you're a person when you're outside of work. So Kyrie Irving is supposed to be a different person on the court than when he is like an inch off of it, right? Killer on the court and off the court, he's supposed to be like, just take abuse. And I think it's just so anyone who doesn't understand Kyrie's point of view, you got to do a little evaluation.
Here's my only criticism of this.
Sure.
I don't mind. Like, I kind of like heckling. I think it's funny. Like you're going to have people there. And though my only issue with it is that you can't heckle them back. Like, the fact that, like, Kyrie's going to get fined $50,000 or whatever for this sucks. Like, if you're getting heckled, you should be able to heckle back. What's the problem with heckling back? It's not like they fought each other or anything. You know, like, a little back.
Well, here's the problem, though. It's like, there's an element of heckling which is fun and, like, so, like, Mr. Whammy, not that he's heckling per se, but it's the fan experience of trying to put...
That's like bumper bowling of heckling.
That's some safe-ass
heckling.
What Kyrie's responding to isn't heckling. It's just simply, like, denigration. It's simply, F you, Kyrie, you're a P, go S-D.
Whoa.
I'm a parent. I'm a dad. So like every curse word now is I spell it out or I just use the
go first. Sit on a dock. Okay.
Go sit on the dock of the bay. You playboy.
That is a very sanctimonious thing that you just said. And I'm with it because, you know, Kyrie's my guy, right? He's on my team. So I feel that way. Can I say what's an egregious act that I cannot stand by no matter what?
Clam chowder.
This was perpetrated. this, the people in the front row who brought their white picket ass family and then bought their like 5 to 7 year old daughters $8,000 tickets or whatever, or $8,000 worth of tickets to a Boston Celtics, Brooklyn Nets playoff game, and then put like giant noise canceling headphones on them, like they're about to go do some yard work, Michael. They're about to go run a leaf blower. Is offensive to every part of my nature. I cannot have this. I will say that wouldn't fly in Brooklyn. I got to say, I don't think it would. I don't think you could have it.
Ban children from basketball. Is that what you're saying? Ban them.
I'm saying ban children from being like, God, how do I even like the idea that you'd bring them to a basketball game and then put like sensory deprivation, like tools all over, like just like
they're in them. Salt water floating in a pod.
And there's definitely a phone going with, I gotta think it was Peppa Pig. I have to admit, I think it was probably, which is basically the mental, I don't know what it does for, it entrances you. It puts you into a state of complete disassociation to where you can fall asleep. And that's what they were doing with these. And, you know, I don't want to, like, nobody go at them on Twitter or whatever. I'm just saying it's a very Boston thing to do because it's a very strange place to be from. And it's a bad place to be from, Mike.
You know, instead of buying the $8,000 ticket, just get a babysitter for your kids, right?
Yeah, like, get a babysitter.
And they get super drunk at the game. Hey, I'm fine with that.
Fire it up. Anyways, okay, let's back to
basketball. Pessimism. Okay, this is my bit again. Drummond. Ugh. Okay, so let me ask you. Drummond had a bad game. He was a non-factor. Claxton played many more minutes than he did. So let me ask you, is this a one-game aberration, or do you think this is a concerning sign that Drummond was so ineffective? He wasn't even getting, you know, the whole point of Andre Drummond, who we love, we've loved the experience, is that he's a rebound machine, and he was just overwhelmed by Horford and Tice.
I mean, he was dropping balls just out of, I think he was like, and especially in that first quarter, there was like a perceptible adrenaline jacked like energy in the room, and neither team could score. And the Nets were just like looking incredibly sloppy. And I was like screaming at the TV, like, Andre, like, chill out, dude. Like, just grab the ball. It's like just trickling out to your, like, to your waist. Just grab it. So I got to think that it's like a one-time aberration just because it just looked so, it's like, that's not you. I don't know. Who is this? Who is this Reggie Evans looking?
It's like when I talk to my son and he's acting up at dinner and I'm like, this isn't you. This isn't, you. Come on. Be a good boy. Claxton played well.
People took issue with Claxton too, and I found that interesting on various places on the internet. They were ignorant to this. I thought Claxton played well. I liked what I was seeing from him. I liked that he also had a full speed two handed layup. Mike, I haven't seen that since like the ABA days.
Bob Cousy.
But I guess people were took issue with the fact that there was a couple of lapses where like Tice and Horford, whatever, could pick, you know, pick away at the rim. And that was also true of like Jaylen Brown had his, like, you know, his couple of buckets of just like kind of uncontested dunks. I guess that falls to rotational stuff. But like, why I think Claxton is incredibly useful out there is because of his ability to switch onto wings. That's like the core. So like, if you have a defensive breakdown that results in a chippy from one of those guys, like, it sucks. Yeah, I get it, but it's not ideal. But it's like not what we're ultimately, that's not like the core premise of what we're trying to do, which is truly like guard the perimeter. And so like you can say like, well, how much is that worth it if you're going to let like those lapses happen? It's like, yes, that's going, but that's just going to happen over the course of a game a couple of times. It just is. Like, we had a couple of buckets like that too. Like, it's like just normal basketball stuff. So if you get like the core principles right, and I think Nick Claxton did net good on guarding the wing, that's like good evidence going forward. But I don't know. People didn't like that he wasn't just like parked in the lane and like being a super rim protector, bro.
Yeah.
That's just not who he is.
I mean, so my thinking is like, so rebounding has been devalued in the NBA. Like when we were growing up, rebounding was like the way you win basketball games. It's almost like rushing yards in the NFL. Like in the 90s, you just need to go, you need to run the ball first and second down, and that was it. And in the NBA, it was, you need to rebound. But to me, it was so here's a statistic. So the Nets starters, I'm going to do math on the fly here, but they did 17 rebounds total for the Nets starters. Al Horford by himself got 15. And then the rest of the Celtics starters got they all got 5, 7, 6, and 4. So another 22 on top. So the starting units for both teams, the Celtics just vastly out-rebounded them. That gave them so many more possessions. And so I'm wondering, do the Nets have to do more to account for the rebounding? Because the way to do it is, one, you have to play Claxton and Drummond together at times to counteract Tice and Horford. Because really it became a size issue. It was Drummond trying to get the rebound, and he was surrounded by two other tall dudes, and no one else on the Nets, you know, because Kevin Durant's really just not a rebounder like that. So do you play Claxton? But then when you do that, you know, you take Bruce Brown off the floor. So then you have a really big lineup. But then Drummond and Claxton haven't played that much together. It would be kind of it'd be very awkward on offense because you don't really have a place to stick them. Or do you resurrect LaMarcus Aldridge? And while LaMarcus on defense would kind of suck because they'd probably try to hunt him for switches, at least he's a big, smart dude. And on offense, he can operate alongside a Drummond or a Claxton pretty easily. And I kind of like the idea of LaMarcus being out there at times because his shot making is going to be very beneficial if he's healthy. Like, it seems so odd that he disappeared from the rotation for a guy who was so effective early on. But all these things, like, because there's no perfect big on this team, and you're going against a team that plays two bigs. So you could match their size, or you just completely give up rebounding and you go Houston Rockets and you say, we're not even playing Drummond or Claxton. KD, you're our big until Ben Simmons comes back. And we're going like KD, Curry, Mills, KD, Curry, Mills, Kyrie, and I don't know, Bruce Brown. And Bruce Brown's just like playing center and running around and creating havoc the way that he does. So I don't, like, how much do you have to care about rebounding to make a change? Or do you simply think Drummond's going to play better? And if Drummond's like who he usually is, him and Claxton alternating should be enough. Do you know what I'm saying? I know I threw a lot out there, but.
Yeah, I don't want to. I guess I'd say.
You don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I understand.
I just think in this first game, like, there was enough that was like conspicuously. Just like not even just like a lack. It was just like dumb bad things. It's like not a lack of execution. Like, I think it just, like, we almost won playing really badly, getting like roughed up pretty significantly. Like, it was just like a handsy game or whatever. And like, I remember like watching Andre Drummond just like not grab rebounds that he would 1000% be normally grabbing, right, in any other game this season. So it's like, you know, I don't know that we totally need to like rethink or retool this, you know, initial plan. There's not much of a plan, you know, going on anyways, but like, it doesn't really need that dramatic a retooling. Now, if that happens again, I guess you take a big hard look at whether just like Tice's and Horford's hands are just like so deft that it's like making Andre Drummond not grab rebounds. Like, that seems implausible to me, but like, maybe, I don't know, whatever. But yeah, I at present, I don't have a real issue with the Claxton Drummond rotation. I mean, like, people who are calling for Aldridge, I like, don't get me wrong, love LaMarcus Aldridge and have liked him enormously throughout the season, but since he's come back from injury, like, has not had a like moment where I was like, ooh, like
he's back. Back, baby. Yeah. Facts. That is, send that fax in. He's back. I mean, yeah, that's the problem with LaMarcus. So, yeah. He would get attacked on defense. Mm-hmm. In a way that, like, Drummond at least can passively kind of, like, if he gets stuck out on the perimeter against Tatum, at least Drummond's got some heft and some quickness to him a little bit. And Claxton's obviously very good at that. That's the thing that he does. LaMarcus would just get ugly at times. But offensively, he just operates in a different space, and he's that sort of that pressure release valve, a Zydrunas Ilgauskas type, you know, a mid-range big, which is very exciting. A couple quick things, but we have this big conversation about bigs, and we have to get to Ben Simmons. Does this feel like the time?
Sure. Rip it.
Woj has reported that Ben Simmons has been pain-free for a week, and he's going to start practicing with teammates this week. Okay? So I ask you, Brian, the quote is maybe he'll play 10 to 15 minutes when he comes back, if he comes back, and maybe game 4, 5, or 6. Though, if he's already playing with teammates, which would indicate he's no longer playing against air, though we don't know anything from Steve Nash, How much does Ben Simmons help after seeing game one and you saw that the Nets were deficient rebounding? They had trouble getting easy buckets, and they definitely needed someone else on the floor who could do something with the ball and maybe someone who could play defense. Does Ben Simmons playing 10 to 15 minutes, like, does that dramatically alter the series, or is it just like a nice sort of small benefit? Because I'll say this, they lost by 1 point, you know, and if they had Ben Simmons and he's playing the 4 minutes that Kessler Edwards played, he's probably more helpful in 4 minutes.
Yeah, I guess. But we're talking about, it's like such tiny margins of that, like, at that point you can make an argument for anybody helping in that amount of time, you know, like, it's just such a fringe, like, fringe use of a player of that caliber, which you get excited for a player of that caliber because of their superstar potential or whatever. So, like, I mean, like, yeah, if you, like, play a superstar 4 minutes, can that, like, help? Yeah. Yes, but it doesn't
helps you 0.25 points, right?
yeah, like, and if that's the difference between a win and a loss, like, is that really up to Ben? Like, is that Ben Simmons' fault that he did that? So I don't know. I'm having a hard time, like, getting super duper stoked about the Ben Simmons thing. Yeah, like, obviously I want him to come back, and if he plays 10 to 15 minutes, I think that there's a lot of reasons why that's, like, cool and exciting. But I still, until I see, like, some real evidence that he's, like, gonna be a big time producer, like, I just, you know, having another really good defender is helpful. Like, it is somewhat helpful. It doesn't solve all of our problems, and he's only going to play 10 minutes a game. Like, you know, I don't know what to do with that. I just don't know how to, like, factor that into my analysis.
Did you see the latest Spider-Man movie?
No.
Okay. I'm going to ruin it.
I'm not going to watch superhero movies going forward. I've kind of made that.
That's a drastic error. Because there's some great work being done by Marvel Studios.
If you look at, like, HBO Max and you go and just look at how many Batman movies got made, like, they have, like, all, like, it's just so many. There's so
many, and they're all grumpy, you know?
Yeah, I just don't. Besides, like, George Clooney
with his nipples, but
I get it. I get the Joker. I get the Batman. I see the yin and the yang there. It makes sense. Like, I got it. I don't need it anymore.
You're satiated. Yeah. From Batman stories. I understand that. But basically, this doesn't ruin the movie. I'm always sensitive to ruining the movie, but, like, it, you know, this doesn't ruin the movie.
What's the name of this movie? Can we spoiler alert this a little bit?
Spider-Man Far From Home. Is that it? The most recent Spider-Man movie, you know, and it
It was No Way Home.
No Way Home. It was the most popular movie since Avatar, essentially. Or Endgame. I should say Endgame.
Wow. Huge.
But basically, Doctor Strange has to erase the world's memory of Spider-Man. That's the catalyst that starts the movie.
So tight. I love that. So sick.
If we could get Doctor Strange to erase everyone's memory of what Ben Simmons did in those playoffs, the last playoffs against the Hawks, and even erase it from Ben Simmons' memory, and the memory that I have of Ben Simmons is pre that moment, I would be super pumped for Ben Simmons, because the Ben Simmons I remember before that moment is the rebounding, it's the defense, it's the ball handling, it's the passing. He's an engine in transition and all that stuff, right? But because of that playoff failure and then the ensuing months where he just disappeared from the team because of his mental health issues that he was working through, and then he shows up in the Philadelphia 76ers wearing sweatpants and having the cell phone in his pocket when he practiced, and then he disappears again. And then he comes to Brooklyn, and then he has a back injury, which is still mysterious to me. But he comes back, and okay, all this stuff. If we're getting the Ben Simmons pre that Hawks series, I'm super excited, because that's an all-star, that's an all defensive player, and that's, if you add that to your team even for 10 minutes a game in the playoffs, that matters greatly. You know, like, Patty Mills played 12 minutes. Now, the good thing about Patty Mills is that he only took one shot and he made it. He didn't do, like, the normal 1-for-5 where he kind of kills your team a little bit. If you're inserting all-NBA defense, you know, beast that is Ben Simmons for 10 minutes, that margin is significant. You know what I mean? The team lost by 1 point. They were up by 1 point with 10 seconds left, right? Like, that is a significant margin. I just have no idea what Ben Simmons is going to be. I have no clue. And this team doesn't know how he's going to play with any of these guys. Ben Simmons is one of the most unique, difficult players to understand how he will look on another team. But how could you not be like, it is exciting, the possibility.
Yeah, I don't want people to get me wrong. Yeah. I want to see him. I want to see him back, and I want to see him back for 25 minutes a game.
I think that's going to happen. The 10 to 15 is the early on, like, hey, game four, he's going to play 10 to 15 minutes. And if he feels fine, there should be no reason why he can't play 25 the next game, right? Like, I really don't want this to be. I mean, they're going to lose the series if they're doing like this little bit by bit approach. Like, let's rip the Band-Aid off, Benji. Rip the Band-Aid off.
If he could just come back and like D up Tatum like he did like 2 years ago, I'm here for it. I want, you know, that's awesome to think about.
And if you get him, you can do small lineups where he's the five, KD's the four. They're both protecting the rim, and then you still have Bruce Brown, Curry, and Kyrie. You could probably take Bruce Brown off the floor and go with like Patty Mills. And then you have four great shooters around Ben Simmons. Like, you have much more line of versatility. Or you could even play him with Drummond. And then you go really big and you can match up against Tyson Horford, where Ben Simmons is attacking Tice off the dribble or Horford off the dribble, right? Which is way more exciting. So he's this massive X factor. Of course, Robin Williams is potentially coming back too. So there's a lot. Anything else from the game that you feel like we didn't talk about we need to hit?
Like
the bench played well. Like Goran, we didn't talk about Goran.
Dragic looked good, and I went on the Athletic show the Sunday or Saturday. What is it called? Saturday Slam and Jam, and I was like, hey,
Athletic NBA show.
I think Goran Dragic could be a weird X factor off the bench, and lo and behold, he kind of was. So I
he
felt
was
good about
26
that. I just wanted to pat myself on the back. That's what I wanted to do at that time. He gave me.
He was super effective. So, like, the one thing is that I worry that he won't have that game ever again in the playoffs. And, you know, like, yeah, that was
the Goran Dragic game.
Yeah, and that boosted this team. It, like, helped the fact that kind of covered up the fact that Curry, Drummond, and Bruce Brown, like, didn't really do all that much. I don't know. People should be – it's super disappointing.
Okay. We're okay.
Yeah.
Everyone just, you know, sit tight. It's going to be Nets in seven, like I said. It's going to be Nets in seven. Yeah. So, don't freak out.
If they had won, how great would that have been, huh?
That felt nice. Mike, but get us out of here.
Hey, okay. If you had not subscribed to our YouTube, you should. Well, I think we have 1,000.
Almost to 1,000, baby.
Almost 1K. If we get to 100,000, we will, you know.
Need always the naked streak is, you know, we will Brooklyn Bridge naked, is calling my name.
You find us on Twitter at BKGlueGuys. Discord, the Discord's hot. I mean, it's playoff time. You should be in that Discord.
It's popping.
It's discord.gg/glueguys.
That's right. Nailed it.
And there's so much more out there. We're going to be potting after every game. We're going to, you know, bring on some guests. Hopefully this Nets team wins the championship and we'll just keep talking forever. But we'll see. Hey, basketball.
Yep.
Playoff basketball. Yay.
See you guys.